Hello, rap fans. It's Richard Herring here. Thank you for listening to my podcasts, powered by Acast Plus. Do tell your friends if you think they might enjoy them too. And do come and see me on tour in my show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all tour dates, going to lots of places in the UK. Some extra gigs added in London at the Leicester Square Theatre and the Bloomsbury Theatre. The Leicester Square Theatre first gig is very nearly sold out, so do rush along to those shows, London, if you want to come along. Some of the shows selling fantastically well, some of them selling pretty badly. Hello, Swindon. Do you know I'm coming to your town? Please buy some tickets. And I do have to give a trigger warning. I've done the show only a few times and 6 men have passed out. After the bit where I explain what happens to you during an operation for testicular cancer. So, are you man enough to handle my balls? Only come if you are, have lots of balls and are not scared of balls. There is some mild testicle trauma involved in this story of testicular cancer. It's mainly funny, though, and if you don't come, that means you're scared to come, and I'm going to judge you, so... It's like going on a fairground ride, so do come along. It's going to be very exciting to see if you make it through. I'll give you a badge if you make it through unscathed. Anyway, come and see the tour, richardherring.com for all that news. Some great Rahalastapas coming up, I have to tell you, in the next few weeks. The tour was a lot of fun. Thanks very much to everyone who came. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my stupid fucking podcast.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Well, well, hello, ladies and gentlemen. Ooh, nice, isn't it? Welcome to the Newtown Theatre. Please welcome a man who is currently regretting having sex before marriage. It's Richard Herring!
Hello, Edinburgh! Oh, yeah, here we are. It's still going on. Welcome. So long. Hasn't even started. Welcome to Richard Herring's Losing Sense of Time podcast. We're about a week into the fringe. I've no idea what day it is. I looked at my watch this morning and it was 7:30 and I thought, that's impossible. I've already been up for infinity hours. Don't come to Edinburgh with two little children. Though I was hanging out with all the middle-aged men who've come to Edinburgh to do chat shows because it's easier than writing stand-up shows. And we all call it Rahalastapa, so that is going to... But yeah, I was on my walk down, didn't think I had any material for you today, but on my walk down I saw someone advertising, I guess the show, a man with a... You might have seen a man with a sandwich board that said, sex before marriage equals hell after death. The illusion is brief, the remorse is long. I mean, I'm not going to see that show. Oh, that's... It's terrible, he's an old guy. But, you know, sex before marriage... I mean, sex after marriage, getting married is hell after getting married. That would be my discussion. I'm not. I nearly asked him if he'd had sex before he got married, what he knows about it, but he didn't. I decided not to. My chairs have been on the news. Don't know if you saw them on the front page of, I think, the Telegraph this morning. I think that one. John McDonnell was sitting in there yesterday. For there's another chat show one just before this. It's not as good as this one. He was talking about whether Scotland was going to be allowed to be independent by the Labour Party, as if they'll have any say in it. He was sitting in that chair right there. And I didn't really say yesterday, when I came in yesterday, him and his little gang of people were in the dressing room all, and they were all whispering to each other. Really genuinely, they were working out the policy, what they were going to say to the press afterwards. But it was like, if I'd been interested, I could have listened in and told you what it was. But I was busy writing emergency questions for the dicks coming on here, so I didn't do it. But there we go. And that's about it. I'm just looking after the kids, and you're not going to get much out of me. The weather was good yesterday, wasn't it? Way of thunder and lightning, whatever I did in yesterday's show, God did not approve of that. That's what I'm saying. There was no thunder and lightning when I was having sex before marriage. All right, look, my first guest today is probably best known for her appearance on The Roast of Helgi Steiner, and I tell you, it's about time someone took him or her down, whoever that is. They've been asking for it. She's from Iceland, and I'm going to have a crack. She hasn't told me how to pronounce her name, and I'm going to have a crack at it. Her name is Snorlaug Ludvigsdóttir. Let's slow from Iceland, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome. How did I do? How did I do on the old...
That was not great, Richard, I have to be honest with you. My name is really easy. It's Snjólaug Ludvigsdóttir. You can pronounce that, right? Yeah. Snjólaug. Yeah. You can call me Snow.
Snow. I will call you Snow.
Makes me sound like a dickhead, though, but yeah, it's fine.
Snow from Iceland, which
Snow.
I think you have some...
She sells herbal medicine from her garage. She's not great, but yeah.
So, I've never had an Icelandic comedian. I didn't know there was comedy in Iceland. I didn't know that.
Well, now that I'm here, there is none. Nobody's laughing over there.
I've been to Iceland,
you
as
have?
We were briefly discussing backstage.
Yeah?
I did a show in 2002-ish called Talking Cock. And yep. Iceland is the home of the penis. That's where the penis was invented. There's a museum, which you're aware of, called the Penis Museum.
Penis Museum,
the Phallological Museum.
Yes, yeah.
Which
you
I
went to it?
I came to Iceland just to go to the Penis Museum. I didn't go and see any of the geezers or any of the other stuff.
You know, we
rubbish.
Have, like, amazing nature, but you just saw the cops.
Yeah, just penises. Yep, okay. Whales, mm-hmm. penises.
Mm-hmm. Whale.
There was no man penis there now, but there is now, I
there
believe.
There is now, yeah. A man donated his penis to the Penis Museum.
Yeah.
He must be really proud of it.
Well, hopefully he's dead. I'm hoping he's dead. I was talking yesterday about how, I do that. I don't mind dying. What I don't like is the idea my penis will not survive beyond my death. So
no,
I might send mine in a jiffy bag.
Yeah. That's a good idea.
Sigurdur Hjartarson. Mm-hmm. How did I do with that one?
Huh?
Sigurdur Hjartarson. That's the man who runs the Icelandic Penis Museum.
That was awful.
Yeah. I don't really. I'm not. I'm. Mm-hmm. I'm more of a Scotch speaker, really, than an Icelandic one. Your show is called Let It Snow.
Let It Snow. Yeah, and it's clever, right? It's a play on my name. I know.
So tell us about what the show is about.
It's about me. I'm a really interesting person.
That's true of pretty much every show in Edinburgh. I mean, not about you. It'd be amazing if all the shows were about you.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
they're
that'd
all
be great.
About the person doing the show.
So that you're saying I'm basic?
No, I think it's a common. It's not unusual for comedians to talk about themselves.
Okay, yeah. It's about me growing up in Iceland, and I also grew up in France.
Yeah.
Grew up in Paris because I'm better than all of you. And then it's just about me being single and. Being kind of an asshole sometimes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it is like all the other comedian shows.
Yeah, super basic.
That's exactly that. It's good to see. Oh, I should say, tell me about the roast of Helgi Steiner. Is it it's a man, right? Helgi?
Helgi is a male man, yes.
Yeah.
And he's a friend of mine that I roasted in Reykjavik. Okay. How the fuck did you find that?
I find out about everything. It was very hard to find out anything about you that I could understand on the internet. And that was at least the title was in English.
Because it was in English, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is he another comedian?
He's another comedian,
okay.
Yes.
So there's two.
There are two. No, there are two other Icelandic comedians here as well.
Wow.
So it's empty, yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's terrific that this, it is a wonderful thing about Edinburgh, this international flavour. We've got an Australian, Aboriginal Australian coming on Saturday, and it's amazing that all the world's comedy comes together in this.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah. And you've been to Edinburgh briefly before, but not for the full run before.
No, I only did like 2 weeks last year. This is my full proper run. Yeah.
And whereabouts are you on? Let's get that out of the way.
How am I doing?
Well, no, which venue are you on?
Oh,
and how are you doing?
I'm doing great.
Okay, cool.
I'm doing great. I'm at the Old Toll Booth. Okay. It's the new Gilded Balloon venue.
Okay.
At 8:30 p.m.
And it's pay what you want.
Yeah.
But you can buy a ticket beforehand if you want to ensure you get.
You can buy tickets on the internet, yes.
When people pay what they want, mm-hmm. do they pay more than they would be paying if they were buying in advance, or do they just give you 20p?
No, I've had some bills, some paper in the bucket. That's good.
It's good to know that people do that. There's a lot of things. The Free Fringes operates on that bucket policy as well, so people can't book ahead often for that. But it's nice that people do. You should be paying.
You should be paying.
I quite like Iceland from what I saw.
Yeah.
But if I was in charge of the world, mm-hmm. what I would do, because the Icelandic people are already, there's something about the Icelandic people that sets them apart from even the Northern Europeans. I think there's a little Scandinavian feel mm-hmm. there. Mm-hmm. I would stop anyone being allowed to come in or out of Iceland.
Really?
Yeah, and leave it for about 100,000 years.
Okay.
And see how Icelandic humanity evolved. That is what. Because I think they might become elves.
They might become elves.
Yeah, I think you might become elves if you were left without any other outside DNA coming in.
Do you know anything about the Icelandic elves?
I don't really know much about them.
No. They're just two things.
Okay.
Do you need to know?
Okay.
They're very small.
Yeah.
And they don't exist.
That's why I want to do this human eugenics program.
Yeah.
I mean, it'd be cruel in a way, but also not so bad in a way. Mm. I'm presume, being from Iceland, you're quite popular in Scotland after the World Cup.
When we beat England at football, yes.
And so, there was some amazing statistic about that, because there's not very many men of football playing age in Iceland. So you had something like about 1 in 30 chance of being in the team if you were of the right age.
Yeah. We were never good at football.
No.
I don't know what happened. Our national sport was always handball.
Okay.
Do you know? It's a real sport. It's like volleyball for people with brain damage or something. But we, but then all of a sudden we became great at football.
Well, better than England.
Better than England, yes. Not great, but yeah, good. Yeah.
It was a thrilling rise through the ranks for Iceland. I did want Iceland to win.
Yeah.
I mean, I even wanted them to beat England, to be honest.
We needed a good rap after the financial crisis and the volcanoes and all of the other shit that we've been doing. So it was good.
You have been doing a lot of stuff.
I know.
That's partly why I want you to be isolated. As well as that experiment. There's a lot of mammals in Iceland, though. That's why the guy was interested in. I mean, I'm not going to hearken about the penis museum all the time.
No. But let's.
But there's a lot of different mammals up there, aren't there?
Yeah.
He was only mainly interested in Icelandic mammals. Sigurdur,
okay. Mr. Hjarts. I haven't been there because I'm not as obsessed with penises as you are. But I might. What was your favourite one?
There was a really big whale penis that was six foot, 7 foot tall.
I don't understand those numbers. Could you speak human?
No. I'm 5 foot, 6 and a half. I thought I was 170 centimetres, but I'm 168 centimetres. So it's another...
So a whale's penis is a full Richard Herring?
No, it's higher than me. It was bigger than me. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And I do have a question about that, which we may get onto. But 6 foot is about 200 centimetres.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So whale vaginas must be massive.
Yeah.
That must be just.
No,
like
they're really small. It's just the male whales have a great time, and the female whales not so happy. You could probably stand inside a female whale's vagina if you want to.
Yeah, I want to. Now.
I mean, I would do the vagina museum if it was up to me. But and then we could try that, and then you could go into the hall of whale vaginas, couldn't you? You'd come out and they go, you know, that hall is made out of a whale vagina. That is the.
What are we talking about?
What are we talking about? Is the cod war still a big thing in Iceland, or is that?
We cannot stop talking about it constantly on the news.
I mean,
remember that.
I just want to say from our side, I hope...
You're sorry.
I hope it's all there. Well, I don't think we're sorry. I think we were right. But it's... let's start up again. Would you fancy starting? It was quite a serious conflict. Let's not take the... So all I found out about you on the internet is your parents divorced when you were 12. That's why you moved...
Yes.
From Paris or France back to Iceland?
To Iceland, yeah.
Okay, who got you in the divorce?
My mother.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I still see my dad.
That's good.
Once a year or something. No, that's not even funny. We are good friends.
Okay.
And I moved from Paris to Iceland, and that was quite a shock.
Yeah.
Because the Icelandic school system is not like the French school system. It's very strict in Paris. Do we have any French people in?
Unlikely.
No, great, good. Okay, I can tell you whatever bullshit you know. They're very strict.
Yeah.
If you misbehave, they bring out the guillotine and chop your head off, and you never, you know, misbehave again. Icelandic schools are like zoos. It was fun, but then I completely changed and became wild and crazy and started doing stand-up. I don't know where I would be if I was still
in
Paris.
So when you were living in France, did you presumably were speaking French, and did you see yourself as a French kid, and then you went back?
I was like a mademoiselle. I was dressed to it. I would never be wearing a hole in my jeans if I was, you know, still in France. But yeah, I was a proper human, and then I became just a wild animal.
Yeah. Robin Ince's excellent book about comedians, which is called You're a Joke and So Am I, is from memory, thinks that comedians had a trauma in their childhood, or a lot of comedians had a trauma in their childhood. Do you think that move and that your parents breaking up and having to move as well, and that big change in your life, quite a sensitive time, 12
being
years
old. Being the outsider is also probably something that works with humour, like is an inspiration, I think, probably, yeah. You have to like really try to win people over. Yeah.
And so how many comedy clubs are there in Iceland? How, when you started doing comedy, is it like Reykjavik, or is it all
there
over?
Are two in Reykjavik now. Both of them are in English, so you can go over there and you can understand the jokes, which is better. But then there are also just I also work as a like professional stand up. I do like corporate events and stuff.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So was it an easy move into stand up? It doesn't sound like there's a lot of stand up.
I started in London. I was studying screenwriting in London. Nobody wanted to read my screenplays. It was like sending them to the moon. And so I started to do this, like get an instant reaction.
Yeah.
I felt good starting in London as well, because I didn't know anyone there. Like there would be, if I start in Iceland, you have like three ex-boyfriends in the room, and you know all of your family and stuff. So that felt good. And yeah, I haven't stopped since. That was 6 years ago, I think. Yeah.
6 years. Okay. Cool. Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I'll ask you. I warned you about the emergency questions. I think.
Yep.
We'll see what comes up. See if the one about the 6 foot tall man penis comes up. It might do. You never know. I've been asking this one a lot, this festival, so I'll ask you, have you ever seen a ghost? It's your elf.
Don't exist.
They don't exist.
No. Have you seen a ghost?
I know, because I've got one in my house, but I haven't seen it. It's a dead baby.
It's a dead baby?
Well, I hope it's dead. Otherwise, we've got a living baby in our house that keeps crying. Oh, shit, it might be my baby. We left it, and it's probably dead now.
How'd you... Well, as ghosts go, a dead baby is probably the best version of a ghost.
Yeah, they can't move around much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they come for you. You can just bat them off.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Penny, I don't know. No, I don't believe in ghosts. But I think when people are very tired, their minds play tricks with them, and that's what happened to us.
Yeah.
We were very tired because we just had a baby, and we could hear a baby crying. Mm-hmm. That wasn't our baby. Plus, we live in an ex-hospital where loads of babies must have died. Who knows? Who knows?
Your home sounds creepy.
It is. It's very creepy. I've never said this is question 80, and you'd think by this stage I would have good questions. Mm-hmm. So early in a book of 1,000, have you ever stolen a golf buggy?
I don't think I've ever even seen a golf buggy.
I don't think I have either. No. I've never been in one.
I've never played golf.
I've been on a buggy, like when sometimes you're in an airport, you know, and they allow old people to go.
Why are you on that?
Well, I just jumped on it. Just once I was allowed to go on. I went to Thailand, and I think we had a business class ticket.
Mm.
When we got off the plane, they took us on a little buggy. Really good.
Yeah.
Me and some old people. And might just have looked at me and thought, oh, he needs a bit of... He's had a long flight.
Let's see, what else? What's the next? What is the most stupid thing you've done for love? These are great questions. Where did these come from?
Most stupid thing I've done for love.
I mean, I've done a lot of stupid things for love. I'm trying to think for myself for this one. I remember once I was quite infatuated with someone. It was sort of having an on-off thing, and it was secret, though, you know. I was working with them, so I wasn't allowed to tell anyone what was going on. But then when she wanted to hook up, I was allowed to go round. But I wasn't allowed to tell anyone it was happening. It happened to me quite a lot, that, actually. People wanted to have sex with me, but they were ashamed of it.
Tell no one about it.
And I remember kind of buying some flowers and a bottle of wine from, like, a news agent. So they were
shitty flowers.
Partially dead flowers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then I saw her, she wasn't in, and I sat on her doorstep for ages thinking this was one romantic gesture. Oh. And then I eventually, after about 2 or 3 hours, gave up and left the bottle of wine and the dead flowers on the doorstep, which is more of a threat, really, isn't it?
Yeah,
some red wine and
some
dead flowers. So that was probably good. She carried on having sex with me. So it was fine.
I don't remember anything like stupid. I've drunk dialed people, please love me, you know, all of that. I've had sex.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Before marriage?
That's a stupid... before marriage.
Before marriage, I've got some bad news for you.
Yes, I know.
From the guy on the mount.
From the guy upstairs?
Yeah. I think he was on behalf of God. I think he was working on behalf of God, but... I haven't regretted it yet. I mean, I think he's saying in hell you're going to regret having premarital sex.
Are you, though?
I think...
You're probably worried about other stuff when you're in hell.
I mean, there'll be other stuff that I've done. I had a lot of premarital sex, but I think if I hadn't had sex before I got married, then the sex that I had after I'd been married, I would have regretted that in heaven for eternity.
Yeah,
as well.
Yeah.
You go, God, why didn't I practice a bit before and go and have sex with someone who'd had sex with someone? Just the idea of two virgins having sex on their wedding night.
Oh, that's horrible sex. That's not good. Yeah, that's awkward.
Mm-hmm. That guy's a prick. That guy with that. If you see him, give him a slap from me. We'll do a couple more. Okay, this is for a child, this question. Would you rather have a neck like a giraffe or a tongue like a lizard?
Okay, a neck like a giraffe or a tongue?
Giraffes have long necks. I don't know if you have those in Iceland.
Oh,
they're famously very long.
Oh, thank you. Oh, that's the... Yeah, that's the long neck. Okay, thanks for that. Or a tongue like a lizard. A tongue like a lizard. The neck would just be, I mean, in your way. You couldn't be walking through doors. And that would just be... And I could do some good things with a lizard tongue.
I think it's probably the sensible choice. But, you know, imagine all the high-up leaves you could eat.
Yeah. Because I mainly just eat
that.
Leaves. Yeah.
That's why you would... you'd be able to survive on the Serengeti. How often do you replace your pillows? Is my final question to you.
Should I be replacing them?
You meant to replace your pillows twice a year.
Twice a year?
Every
why?
Every 6 months you meant to actually throw your pillows away. That's a shocking statistic, isn't it? I've got pillows that I've had since I was at home with my parents still in my house.
Me too. I think I've had mine now for 10 years. Well, is it just filled with bacteria?
I think it's the bacteria. They lose their, you know, their consistency, don't they? Yeah, they're full of spit, I guess.
Spit?
Yeah.
What are you doing in your sleep?
Drooling.
Drooling?
Yeah,
okay.
They're full of
I don't drool.
Jism.
I don't think I have that problem either.
They're full of hair. There's probably a lot of hair. There's some mites in there.
But it's obviously okay. Like I'm not still dead or sick or anything. So it's just good bacteria.
Imagine how healthy you'd be if you'd had new pillows every So remind us again of when your show is on.
Old Tollbooth Market at 8:30 p.m. Let it snow.
Let it snow.
Yes.
If you want to see Icelandic comedy via London and Paris and the world, go and see that. Fantastic. Ladies and gentlemen,
Thank you.
Let it snow. Thank you very much. And I always forget to say in my opening monologue, you might have seen Scroobius Pip hanging around outside. He loves to come to my gigs and stalk me. He does a very good podcast if you...
and is a fantastic musician also and actor. He does the thing called the Pod Bible, which he's been giving out, so I hope you've got a copy of that. That's a lot of fun. I think you can get that online as well. And also here, if you come to see the show, you get a free program from me. What I do with that is at the end of the show, I make a collection for Scope, which is a charity I'm patron of, which is involved with trying to get equal rights and access for disabled people. If the people here feel those programs were worth something and would like to donate some money, on the way out, people might be holding buckets, but I'll be sitting at a little table in the doorway, like I've got a bag for life full of my books that I'm selling for £10 each. I used to be on the telly, and if you would like to donate some money to Scope, you can do so by giving the buckets there. Please do give some people, or you can text now as well. There's a text number in those programs. If you would like to buy 1001 Emergency Questions, which we just heard some questions from, or the original Emergency Questions book, they are both for sale. If you buy both books, you get a free sheet of stickers. I'm one of the cool kids. They're really good stickers. You can buy them without buying the books if you want. So please give some money to Scope, and I'm very happy to sign your programs or say hello or do a selfie after the show as well. That's just for the people here. The people at home, you are not allowed to do that. That would be weird. Don't come and find where I live. So,
cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I've stood up. I'm going to sit down again. It was unnecessary. My second guest today is probably best known for being the warm-up man for Queen on to the 2014 New Year's Eve broadcast that they performed on. We'll find out if Freddie Mercury was still with the band at that stage. I don't know very much about them. Will you please welcome Mr. John Robbins? John Robbins. Welcome. You're looking very good.
Hello.
Come in.
Hello.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm okay, thank you.
Good. Where are you from? You're not from anywhere exotic. I like Iceland.
From Bristol.
Bristol.
I've been to Iceland.
Yeah. What, the supermarket?
No.
Do you admire me for not even doing that joke once in that whole interview? That's how classy a comedian I am. But I had to get it out the minute she was out there.
I've been to Iceland. I've got a rip in my jeans and my parents are divorced. So we're the same.
We are the same. Maybe you guys should get together. You say you're single at the moment, John?
No, I'm engaged.
I thought you were engaged.
Yeah.
I'd like to check with you because, you know, it's on and off, isn't it, with you?
Depends, you know, if I need to earn a bit from a tour.
There'll be a show about being in love. There'll be a show about it going wrong.
If you never get married,
yeah,
then sex isn't sex before marriage. It's just sex.
Oh.
So maybe it's only the people who eventually get married that go to hell.
Loophole. Could you put that on a sandwich board and follow the guy around?
I'd love to.
It'd be really good. I know you like Queen. That's, we know about that. So that must have been pretty. Was that when it says New Year 2014? Was it the New Year from 2013 to 2014 or 2014?
Oh, that's a good question. Yeah. I think it was 2014 to 15.
Right. Okay.
They did a live broadcast from Westminster City Hall, mm-hmm. and my agent asked if I would like to do, I think initially an hour and a half. Before they came on, and I said, "That is, you're kind of giving with one hand and taking with the other. You're giving me my dream job, but in the most horrific circumstances." And then they said, "Well, you do 40," and I said, "That is, it is too long. You just need someone for 10 minutes to get the crowd going." So they eventually split it between me and like a blues guitarist.
Okay.
And I sort of played silly like Queen warm up games, but it was pretty mad at the time.
Yeah. It must have been nice for you. I mean, Queen aren't that good, though, are they? So they're not really a very good, they're not that good a band, really, are they?
Do you honestly think that?
I don't really like music.
See, someone's left.
There's someone's seat. I don't really like many bands, but you know, there's some nice tunes in there. There's
I've already won you round. I didn't say anything.
I like Bohemian. I remember Bohemian Rhapsody when that came out. I remember that video the first time I saw it.
It's good. It's sort of weirdly become our nation's song.
Yeah.
Which I'm pleased about.
Yeah.
Sort of odd. It's an odd song be everyone's favourite song. And it is everyone's. It's your favourite song.
I like the video. I like when all their heads were together in that little tight shot.
Yeah, it's
good. Then it all went... And honestly, in the 1970s, we'd never seen anything like it, John. I mean, you can only watch it with the hindsight of a man born in 1983 and think, I wonder what it was like to see those special effects in 1975 or something, was it?
75, 6, yeah. It's the only song.
It was fucking mind-blowing. If there's any old people, wasn't it? You're old, mate. Remember Bohemian Rhapsody the first time you saw it? Fucking blew. When it went, whoa! In diamond shapes. How did they do it? so I like that bit. And I like it in Shaun of the Dead when they're beating up that guy with...
But then that's Don't Stop Me Now.
Don't Stop Me Now, yeah. That's a good one. Yeah, they are quite good.
Yeah, they're great.
Yeah, they're all right. It's weird, isn't it, when you're asked to be on before a band. It's even a band that you...
It's impossible, and it should never be attempted.
It's a very... I wish you'd done an hour and a half of non-Queen-based comedy.
they were already, like, some people were sort of yelling quite abusively to get Queen on, but it's like... It's at midnight. I can't bring forward 2015. I can't make time change. You know when they're coming on. But also, it was in Westminster, and that's all sort of part of the cordoned off area for the celebrations. And also, so everyone had to be in at 6 p.m.
Right.
And there's no drink served in the hall. So you basically had people in a room for 6 hours waiting for Queen to come on stage. It was awful circumstances, but quite good fun.
And did you get to chat with the guys after?
I met them very briefly in the sort of the green room. Had a chat with Brian May about prawns.
Okay,
That was it.
Was the chat about just did that came up, or were there prawns being served? Because that is weird. If you went, Brian, can I just want to talk to you. And my one subject is prawns. What do you know about them starting now?
They were serving little sort of canapes, and one of them was like little prawn curries.
Okay.
And I said, the food's quite good, isn't it, Brian? And he said, what is it? And I said, they're little prawn curries. And he goes, prawns? I don't like prawns. And that was my first ever words exchange with Brian May. I've subsequently interviewed him for Radio X. And I also interviewed Rami and some of the other actors from the film Radio X, and that's on YouTube. And it was amazing because, when you're a stand-up, sort of lots of little clips somehow get online. So after 10 years or 20 years of doing it, you search for yourself on YouTube, and there's just such a weird mix of, like, interviews you did for, like, early Edinburgh PR that had 20 views and sort of clips of stand-up you really wish weren't there. And then there's this interview I did with the Queen cast. It's got like 150,000 views from like super Queen fans. And that's like probably the only thing of any relevance of me that's on YouTube.
So this year's show, did you take a year out of Edinburgh last year? I wasn't here last year either. Yeah, so 2 years ago, your astonishing scenes, you co-won the Comedy Award with Hannah Gadsby. What happened to her? Just disappeared off the face of the earth. Disappeared, didn't it? You'd imagine if they went back and said, let's redo that and just have a think about who was actually the best show, they'd go John Robbins, wouldn't they?
You're veering very close to an awful lot of sleepless nights. She's done absolutely fantastically.
She has done very well, yeah. But that was it. Did it change things to get the to win the award?
Not really career-wise for me, but it sort of did emotionally for me, sort of the way I approached stand-up and this year and writing and stuff. So, but then, like, I felt I had a personally had like a huge like weight off my mind, and then this year I was like super zen and really enjoying the show and just looking forward to doing it without any sort of pressure I put on myself. Then in 24 hours, I'm on the phone to my agent going, where's my fucking posters? I've got six posters, and I'm meant to have seven, and none of them are anywhere near my venue. And so you can't really escape that sort of thing.
It is really hard to overcome that in Edinburgh, I think. And this year is the closest I've ever come to it by not doing a stand-up show and doing a show and having my family with me. So I just literally leave and I'm far enough away out of town that I leave the Fringe behind.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't, I'm not having any of those sort of panics or worries about that sort of thing this year, weirdly. But yeah, it's so many people. You're walking down the mound and just all those posters of all those people who are all dreaming and hoping for the same thing.
But then I don't know, I think if what you're hoping for is to write a new show and to create something, then you can't lose at that. And no. I think we've kind of got into a mindset where the only way you can succeed is to win something or to get good reviews.
Well,
or
that's
to
easy for you to say because you won something, didn't you?
I know,
that's fine.
But it's
you.
That awful thing where you sort of reach the right mindset and then things start to go right. So it sounds like you're retrospectively applying a new sort of philosophy to yourself, but yeah. Actually, if your only goal is to be a creative person, then you can't. I honestly, firmly believe that you can't lose at creativity.
No, well, you shouldn't, and that should be absolutely that should be how everyone's viewing it. But it's so hard.
It's impossible
to escape. And it is a shame, and it's a shame that there is it's a shame there are awards and reviews and any opinions. It's a shame there's an audience.
Yeah.
It's just all happening in a box.
Yeah.
And if it all just happened in a whale's vagina and no one saw it.
Wow.
A dead whale's vagina. If you weren't listening to the first interview, John, that's going to seem weird. well, good. So, I mean... I have this sort of avuncular thing to over quite a few comedians of your generation, and to you as well. I was worried about you 2 years ago.
Were you?
Yeah, because it's the mixture of the show is about your personal life going wrong, and you obviously were deeply affected by that personally, but also your star was on the ascendant, and it's difficult to cope with fame and with...
Well, luckily success. That didn't come. and I'm sort of really glad it didn't in a way, because I sort of think when you start out, or even before I did comedy, you think, oh, I really want to be famous. But the more you see of fame, the more you think, I absolutely don't want... I've got the perfect sort of balance now where I can do the shows I want to do to people who want to see them. I do radio and podcasts with Ellis, which I love. And I don't have to sort of... I can still live my life. I can still sort of go to a pub on my own.
Yeah.
And I would never want anything more than that, really. I think that's sort of... By accident, I've kind of got the career that I think a lot of people would like.
Yeah.
Where you're sort of in control of what you do and you're not necessarily having to do what other people want you to do.
Yes. I mean, that again, it's... sensible and mature, all the things you're saying are correct. they are, and most people don't realise that. The actual being in control, I think, as a comedian and having that autonomy is much more important than anything else. And a lot of times, success takes you to a place that you wouldn't really recognise that was what you wanted, you know. I think especially now, to get onto TV and stuff, you get on TV and you're presenting a late night, Saturday night game show or something, which probably wouldn't be why a lot of comedians got into doing comedy.
Well, I did that. Are you referring to my...
I'm not really. I know you did do one.
Internet-based digital quiz show.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm not referring to it. But that's the only, that's the only avenue that's open to you is panel shows and game shows, really, isn't it? I mean, I'm only on TV when I'm losing at Pointless. That is, and I'm very happy with that.
Well, I do like little bits here and there, but it's so rare that a format actually brings out the best in comics.
Yeah.
I think Taskmaster's a great example. I think Hypothetical, the show that Josh and Acast did.
Yeah, I don't know where they got that idea from.
Where do you think they got that idea from?
I think they copied off me. No, I'm joking. They got off this, mate. Look, what's that? What's that?
But that's not...
Shut up, it's the same.
Whereas other things, you're just kind of beholden to the edit. And so I've done stuff where they're like, we'd like you to talk about this. And you go, great. And then you give them what you want to talk about. And they go, no, actually, we want you to talk about this. And you go back and forth in emails and you think, just fucking tell me what you want me to say and I'll fucking say it, because you clearly have no interest in any of my input, so I don't care.
Yeah.
Just write me a script and I'll just say it, because it's irrelevant.
Yeah.
And they sort of have the idea of what they want, and it's just getting to as close to that point as they can, whereas I think the best shows, like Taskmaster and Hypothetical, just go, we're not quite sure what's going to happen today, but we trust that these people who are comedians and they do that for a living, we trust that in the course of an hour and a half of recording they might say something funny and we'll put all those funny bits together, and you know what, it turns out to be great.
No, it's true. He's very wise, isn't he? Very young. He's a wise head on, actually not that young,
not that young, no. Young.
He looks younger than he is. Everyone does though to me. I'm so old, John. I was on Wikipedia. I don't know if this is something from one of your radio shows. I've been listening to your Five Live show and I've enjoyed it very much. I'm assuming this isn't true, but there's two sections on your Wikipedia page in which it gives nicknames that you had at university.
I think that's
nicknames
sort of,
that you currently have.
That's not true.
It'd be amazing.
I think I know who it is.
These would be amazing if they're true. When you're
essentially, it's the internet's version of graffiti.
It is.
And if you wrote that on my house, you'd be arrested.
Here are your university nicknames according to Wikipedia. The Admiral's Cloakroom.
The Admiral's Cloakroom. Yeah. Fantastic.
Fancy Brian. Arrangements. Wainwright's Excuse Me. A Cautionary Tale for Hedonistic Ladies.
Ooh.
And Rubric.
Rubric?
Yeah. But your current names... There's two. It's about a third of your Wikipedia entry.
Who's
it's taken up with quite
how
massive nicknames.
How do they stay up?
I don't know. Well, presumably someone believes this is true. Current nickname's Bristol Bob. The Terminator, which I quite like. IKEA Moon.
Oh, that's quite sweet.
Yeah, that's quite nice. And Barry. I think it's Barry. It could be. I think Gibbon Arms. It might be Barry Gibbon Arms or Barry and Gibbon Arms.
Oh, I see. Because Barry Gibb.
Yeah, that's why I thought it was together. But I'm not
got
sure.
I've got quite long arms.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's it. Yeah, old Gibbon Arms there. That's the name of this episode. And the Vegan Flymo. But I just wanted to confirm those are not true.
No, they're not true.
Those are not true. you say you were telling me in the dressing room you've got a podcast coming out as well as with Ellis as well. Is it about?
Yeah, we're recording it at the minute, and it's a podcast about how people cope. So we're sort of recording episodes, and that's going to be released, I think, around October, November, and
yeah.
It may actually be broadcast on Five Live if they are of good enough quality.
Oh, okay.
But they haven't. That's
you'll
not
be all right. They do some right shit on Five Live. I listen to it on the way home. They can put it out at like 11, 12 o'clock at night because there's rubbish on it.
It's great. All of their output is fantastic.
It's enjoyable rubbish, but it's rubbish.
It's not rubbish. It's great. they have. You have to balance different topics.
You do.
From the heavy to the light to sport.
Yes.
And that's quite a skill.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we've recorded a couple of episodes. We recorded one with, I don't know, can I say this? Not that anyone cares, but I think I can. We recorded one with David Cotterill, the footballer who had problems with depression, alcoholism, and Tom Bradby, the ITV presenter who has issues with anxiety and insomnia. And we've got quite a few more lined up. There's some we're recording in Edinburgh and some when we get back to London, and hopefully we'll just sort of keep going.
Yeah, well, it's like because you and Ellis are very funny together, and it's a lovely knockabout fun time you have on the radio. But what's nice with your book, which I believe has just come out in paperback today.
Today, out in paperback, The Holy Bible.
The Holy Bible is
you know, you're role models for young men, I think, in a way that there isn't, like, young men have to look up to sportsmen and pop stars, and the behaviour's not great. And yet, I think there's this sort of modern view with you and Ellis, where you're regular guys, but you're happy to be show your emotions and be sensitive and be honest, I think, about what it is to be a man.
And that's just what our relationship is like. But I'm very lucky in that that's what my relationship is like with a lot of my male friends. You know, I've got quite a small group of very close friends, and we're very, you know, open together with each other about, you know, times when you just hate yourself and times when you just messed up and remorse and regret and overthinking and anxiety and unhelpful thoughts and sex and relationships and parents and everything. And then, so to be able to actually talk like that in public is really great. And I think it's important for men to hear other men talking in that way, mm-hmm. because men who don't have outlets to talk in that way frequently kill themselves.
Yeah.
And it's such an appalling sort of crisis we have in this country that is not really being dealt with, and the solution is often so incredibly simple and free. You know, talking doesn't cost anything.
Yeah.
And I think we need a mental health emergency service. I actually think, especially targeting men, to provide support that is relatively cheap, so that people have outlets for, you know, their own dangerous thoughts,
I would say.
But not everyone has dangerous thoughts. You know, some people are pretty chipper about the world, and that's fantastic. But it was entirely accidental, because that's just how we talk to each other.
Yeah.
And it would be very odd for me to sort of spend 3 hours a week not talking to Ellis like I talk to him, and vice versa.
Yeah.
But I think radio, in a way, is a much more personal relationship you have with radio or podcasts, with audio. But it seems rarer in the radio world for sort of people to talk like that outside of sort of very heavy segments about mental health or depression, where everyone all goes, right, we need to change the tone now, so can you stop enjoying yourselves, because you have to listen to this, because it's very important, very worthy, and we're actually talking to someone who's got depression. When did you first have depression? Well, and you think, it doesn't need to be like that. You know, that's good, but how about, you know, today I left a cup out of the dishwasher, I put a load on the dishwasher on, and I turned around and saw an extra cup, and I just hated myself. And I couldn't let it go, because I couldn't turn the dishwasher, it already started. Today I got my hair cut, and every time I get my hair cut, they say, how much do you want off? And I say, not too much on top, and they go, this much, and I think, that would be perfect, but hang on, I could save a bit more money by having it shorter, then it'd be longer until I go to my next haircut. And so they cut it too short, and I come out and I hate it, and I hate myself, and I'm like, why did you tell her to cut it shorter than you wanted it, to save yourself what maybe in the scheme of it £2.50 over the course of a year of just extending the gaps between your haircuts, because for 2 weeks you just hate the way you look. Fucking idiot. And that's what, you know, that is the lighter end of mental health.
Yes.
But that is what it is like on a daily basis, to just fucking hate yourself. So.
Yeah. No, but it's, and I think it is, it's that talking about it. And I think in your stand-up you do as well. And I think especially when you talk about what an idiot one is as a teenager. And I think that is because you don't get any help. You know, when I was a teenager, you didn't get any help with, you were just told by like a bloke with a sign, you're not allowed to have sex before you get married or you'll go to hell. And that was it. And you had to cope with all the things you were feeling and no one was telling you that women and girls also wanted to have sex. So they were telling you had to basically trick or convince women to have sex with you, rather than everyone wants to have sex with each other, that's natural. And so like, it's amazing how screwed up people are over just things like you're talking about, and things, you know, and bigger things as well. And just like talking about those things will massively help. I just can't.
Yeah,
someone had just told me about the girls that girls just be nice to girls and they'll want to hang around with you and then you'll see what happens. If someone had told me that when I was 15, I wasn't hanging around any girls, so it was fine. But yeah, it's sort of so simple, really.
Yeah, and even saying I'm confused or I'm scared or I just feel like a dick all the time. And I did sort of have some of those outlets with friends when I was a teenager, which I'll be, forever grateful for. And also my mum is a counsellor, so I've sort of grown up with that language of, seeing life feelingly, to quote King Lear, deal with it. It's actually see feeling. Oh, I can't remember, I fucked it up. I got the wrong quote, I'm going to kill myself. But that's how the sort of prism through which I've always seen the world. But and it's a that can sometimes make life harder and sometimes make it much richer.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting, so, and also we're going to be slightly serious today by the looks of it. But you've just recently done a documentary about gambling. You're a teenage gambler on fruit machines, which I was as well. I was sort of obsessed with fruit machines to the point that I remember. When I first came up to Edinburgh, I think the first year I was in Edinburgh, maybe the second year I was in Edinburgh, my granddad had given me £1,000 to come to Edinburgh with, and I spent it all on fruit machines.
Yeah, I did. Was left some money by my uncle when he died when I was a kid, and when I had access to that, that's sort of, and it coincided with not being particularly happy as a teenager, and then that bled into university as well. And I got asked to do this thing called Beat the Bookies, which just sounds so grim as a BBC Three documentary. And I said, I don't really want to be involved in a, can you make money from... But it turned out it wasn't actually like that.
Yeah.
And I sort of spoke to the producers and they just wanted to have an interview with me, so I agreed to do it. And I'd completely forgotten about it. And I was like, oh, it's probably not coming out. And then suddenly there was a story about me saying I'd have killed myself online if I was still gambling. And I had to text my mum. I just go, heads up. your friends may have seen on the internet, because she's not really online, that there's quite a few stories about me self-harming and saying I'd have killed myself if I hadn't stopped gambling. Just so you know, when they bring the clippings along to yoga. But I watched it back, and it's weird. It's those interviews you do, like an hour interview, where you feel you've totally solved all of the issues around problem gambling and gambling companies in the industry, and inevitably that maybe gets 90 seconds cut down to. But I thought they were, they were sort of kind in the edit, and they kept in some important stuff.
Yeah. And it's interesting, it's interesting that... I think I was... Because you, same as you, I think, like, you're going to pubs underage and there was fruit machines in the pubs. And it was a good way to, like, if you were on your own or if you were not talking to anyone, it was a good way to pass the time and be doing something and have a bit of excitement. And then I think the problem, we were touring that year with the student show I was in, and we'd played some clubs where they had those real high... jackpot machines, like £100 rather than £10, it was at the time. I know they're everywhere now, those ones. And so we'd won like £50 on one, and then that really made me go, wow. But then I was sort of one of them burnt when the original Gilded Balloon burnt down. It took out the fruit machine place I used to go to.
Really?
Yeah, so I was quite pleased, because it was all, it's all on different levels, it was above it, I think. But yeah, I just went in there and just, in Edinburgh, again, it's that thing in Edinburgh where you're so, the emotions are so high and you're so worried about the way everything's going, and I was so nervous about being around anyone that I would just go in there and disappear in there all day playing fruit machines. It was terrible. Mm. A terrible thing to do. But you're sort of worried, you worry that the internet is there for kids now?
And I just think... the gambling industry can only exist through addicts. And there's a very simple equation, a very simple example, which I gave on the documentary, which they couldn't use in the end. So on a fruit machine, it says under where you put your coin, it says this machine pays out 80%, between 74 and 80%, 82% maybe. So that's basically saying for every quid you put in, you'll get 80p back. Now, if that were true, that is true overall. We'll talk about the average in a second. If that's true, no gambling company, no company on earth can exist on a 20% profit margin. It's not enough. It doesn't pay for the machine, the guy to install the machine, the design of the machine, the tax, all these things. So what it relies in is you putting a pound in, getting 80p back, putting 80p in, getting 64p back, putting 64p in, getting 50p back, and so on and so on and so on, so it's gone. So the business model depends on people who keep doing it until they lose all their money. And what annoyed me so much about the Ladbrokes advert that was sort of mentioned in that was it was saying if the Ladbrokes lifestyle is actually selling a lifestyle, a gambling lifestyle, as if it was something to, you know, aspire to. It's like, if you're a group of normal lads and you like going and watching football and going to the pub and doing a pub quiz and hanging out with your mates, then go to Ladbrokes because that's what normal life is. But what annoyed me is Ladbrokes don't want those people. The nightmare for a bookies is someone comes in once a week and puts a pound on an accumulator every week, because one week they will win £10,000 and the next week they'll come in and put another pound on the accumulator. They don't want that person.
Yeah.
They don't want the old lady who bets on the favourite every Grand National. They want someone who's going to mortgage their house, lose their wife and kill themselves. That's what they want, because that's the only way they can make any money. And it's so ridiculous that every football team is sponsored by gambling companies, because they are reaching the people who can least afford it. And recently, it's only just in the last 2 days, it's come out that Bet32 have basically paid for Wayne Rooney's transfer to Derby because they're sponsored by Bet32. He's going to wear the number 32.
Right.
It's just ridiculous. And the company does a little statement, says we take a very responsible approach to, you know, our gambling operations. And you think, well, you don't. And also, no one really cares, because no one's stopping it. And with so much legislation about this sort of thing, like minimum alcohol pricing, I wrote an article about how cheap alcohol was A, killing pubs and also killing people. And I got this direct message on Twitter from the person who worked for the booze company that sell this like 9% cider that you can get for 10p.
Yeah.
And they kept saying, we are absolutely committed to ending problem drinking. And I kept saying, how? Well, we maintain that we are committed to being responsible. Okay, how? Give me an example. Do you fund any? Do you use any of your profits to help alcoholic charities? Do you put any money towards research? Do you do anything? It's just, we are. What it means is they put "please gamble, please drink responsibly" in tiny little letters on a 5-litre bottle of 9% cider that costs a pound. You know, money will always out. Yeah. God.
Wow. Let's make them stop.
Good.
Well, it's very interesting stuff. It is great to be talking about that. There was a thing when I think I was. I still gamble. I play poker online quite a lot and just always lose eventually. But I kind of figure out it works. There was a point where I was spending way too much money on playing poker online.
I don't for a second think it's impossible to. For someone to have a healthy relationship with gambling,
yes.
To gamble for fun, to gamble infrequently, for it to enrich their lives.
It doesn't
not at
enrich
all.
Your life, it's horrible. But,
but my point is that gambling companies don't care about those people.
No.
They want you to think they do, which is slightly different in that, you know, a pub will survive if someone goes in and has one pint. They don't make any more money if you're addicted to alcohol,
no.
If you see what I mean.
Yeah.
So if you got rid of problem drinking, it wouldn't cause an end to the alcohol industry. It would certainly affect their profits, but it wouldn't end it, because whereas the actual business model of gambling companies relies on people to spend all their money to keep putting it back.
Well, the thing with Ladbrokes, I was writing for the Match at the Point, and I nearly wrote for it, because I sometimes go on the casinos online, and I'd put like 50 quid in or something, and then a thing comes saying, oh, you know, we'll give you double your money if you do, and so you just click it, and you've got £100, you think, oh, great. And then you read the small print, it says you have to play through this money 8 times before you can take anything out. And so you're playing games which are 50-50. No one's going to get anything out. I'd won some money and was going to bank it, and I couldn't bank it. And so I kind of had this long email exchange with Ladbrokes at the time, and they kind of battered me off. But then actually they got hauled up for doing that exact thing, because the statistics don't work. If you make someone play the money through 8 times, then they are going to lose all the money.
Yeah.
So you look like you're giving someone something, you're actually saying, no, we're taking that 50 quid off you for...
They shouldn't be able to advertise. They shouldn't be able to... There should be maximum bets on everything. If they actually were just interested in people gambling responsibly and with mates, they'd say, okay, you can't put more than 20 quid on anything.
Yeah.
But they'll never do that. You shouldn't be able to give free bets away. You shouldn't have any special offers. Ugh. But
come on, let's have a bit of fun.
Come and see. Come and see my comedy show.
Lighten up, mate.
It's called Hot Shame. And I scream at myself.
It's, you know, it's good. It's,
it's a little bit of fun. It's just a bit of fun. If you like fun, for some of the family, it's just a bit of fun.
Let's ask you an emergency question to lighten the mood. What is the worst thing you've ever done? No, what's the worst crime you've ever committed? Which five celebrities are on your celebrity shag list? Do you have a celebrity shag list of celebrities you're allowed to have sex with? That your fiancé won't mind you having sex with because they're on the list if the opportunity arose? And if not, what would they be if your fiancé let you do that?
She wouldn't let me sleep with any celebrities, nor would I want to.
Oh.
But, well, there's a couple of one. What's the other, what's the next question then?
I can ask you another question. Mine change all the time. My wife don't. She want. My wife's still Sawyer from Lost. That's how. That's who she wants to have sex with. Which is just exactly the same as me. What a waste of. What a waste of a wish. Here's an emergency question for you. Have you ever suckled on the dugs of a barren old woman?
Not since early childhood.
Well, hopefully, were they barren?
Oh, I don't know what that really means in that
well,
context.
Well, the dugs are breasts and barren is like an old woman whose breasts are no longer giving out milk.
Like in so the wasteland. was it old woman with wrinkled dugs?
Yeah, probably.
No, only no. I've only suckled on barren dugs through the form of poetry.
Okay. Find a good one in a second, then it'll all be all right. It's been really good. It's lovely to talk to you, John. You're a very intelligent young man.
Oh, thank you.
What? I don't even understand that question. I haven't got my glasses on.
I used to do impressions of you when I was at school.
Did you?
You can't even drive! I used to do that in school. Can you believe
someone
that?
Someone bloody was.
You can't even drive. Red is the colour of the apple so fine. Orange in the sunset is the evening time. Get ready to go. Green is the frog all covered in slime. I used to know that song. I still do know that song. Fuck me. How's that been in my head for 25 years?
The question is that I can't make sense of, and I still can't make sense of, is have you ever had a crumpled ball?
No, but Tom Crane had a twisted testicle, and it is much more of an emergency than it sounds, because you can die.
Right.
And also, it's like being kicked in the balls, but the feeling never ends. And I mean, I'm telling someone else's story here, but the image that stuck with me was his parents driving him to A&E as he threw up out the side of the car window because it was so painful. Can you imagine that?
Ooh.
What I loved about the driving instructor sketch,
yeah,
it's such a lovely detail that his life was full of fivers, that any driving instructor would just have access to huge amounts of fivers.
It was just based on my driving instructor who just wouldn't let me take the test, just kept on giving me lessons. I had about 100 lessons, and when I did the test, I passed so easily. Yeah. I was so good at driving. I said, yeah, I think you're about ready to take a test now. Yeah, I am. I was ready 4 months ago. But thank you for the comedy character that, had it been a success, would have made my money back. Okay, right to the end of the book, the emergency questions book, available in the foyer after the show. Please give money to Scope after the show. Did you know that Jules Holland's Hootenanny is pre-recorded?
Yeah, because I think I know does the warm-up. It's Kevin McCarthy.
How is it?
Because every time I meet anyone who might have the slightest connection to Van Morrison, I will always ask them if they have any Van Morrison stories. Yeah. The best person for Van Morrison stories is your friend of mine, Ardlo Hanlon. He's got a couple of absolute hammers.
Okay.
I think, yeah, Kevin McCarthy, I think, was doing a bit of warm-up when Van Morrison was on and was given short shrift.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, dear. What do you think Jules Holland does on the real New Year's Eve? He can't go out lest his deception is discovered.
Oh, wow. He probably catches up on all his box sets, I would imagine.
I once, and this is a story I'm sure I've told before, was in the audience of the Hootenanny, and then on actual New Year's Eve, was in my house alone watching the Hootenanny, watching myself have a good time on TV in a false
Truman Show style work. I'd been out and I got home before midnight, but I was depressed.
Yeah.
I'd had a nasty night and came back and then watched myself pretending to have a good time on Hootenanny in some false showbiz. So there should be a film. It is like the Truman Show. There's a film it's more like, isn't it? I don't know, but yeah. What a world. Right, look. Oh, shoes. Oh, shoes. We're going to have to go. Tell us about your show and where it's on.
It's called Hot Shame. It's on at the Pleasance Courtyard at 7:30 p.m. and then it tours from the start of September. And do come and see it live here or on tour, because if I film it will be as the last show was, turned down by every single broadcaster on earth. So please do come and see it live.
Do go and see John. It's fantastic and had great reviews already with this show. So do go and see John Robbins, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you very much. Love you.
I'll be out in the doorway like a homeless man with my bag. See you in a sec. You have been listening to Rahulastapa at the Edinburgh Fringe with me, Richard Herring. Thank you to Pest for providing the music. Thank you to everyone at the Newtown Theatre and The Stand, and everyone at GoFasterStripe.com. The producer is James Hingley. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production. Go to Rahulastapa.co.uk to find out more. RichardHerring.com/gigs to find out who my guests are for the rest of the run.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Thanks for listening. Go to GoFasterStripe.com for all your Richard Herring download and book needs. Go to RichardHerring.com/gigs to find out if Can I Have My Ball Back is coming near to you. And please listen to as many podcasts on this feed as you possibly can. And make your family and friends and children and strangers, make them listen too. Do get consent from everyone before you make them listen, though. All right, thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Bye-bye.